Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. They'll analyze the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown. 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 Rewind to SmackDown.
And welcome everybody over on the YouTube side of things, over on our free podcast feed side of things to Rewind a SmackDown. We are nice and warmed up here, me and our good man Neil Flanagan, after talking 45 minutes of today's top stories. And there are a ton of them, Neil. What did we talk about?
We talked about a lot of stuff, dominated by the attempt, the agreement anyway, for Netflix to buy the studio and streaming assets from Warner Brothers Discovery. And what is this going to mean for AEW? We had the answers. John Cena doing the rounds with two long form interviews talking about Vince McMahon. Sticking with John Cena, some legal issues to do with his theme music and the horn section at the beginning, and where did it come from? And
be careful, okay? That's getting too accurate. We might get sued.
Oh yeah, somewhere so, on the free portion of the YouTube stream. What else did we talk about?
Brian Danielson. It's all on screen. It's all on screen here in case you forget. But we did talk about Brian Danielson's neck surgery, and of course, a very busy week in pro wrestling as usual. So go to postwrestlingcafe.com if you're looking for the extended edition of these shows, which come, of course, without any sort of advertising, other than the ad that you're going to hear right now with me plugging Survivor Series 1991, which is another podcast you can get with your Post Wrestling Cafe membership. John and I spent about 2 hours talking about this classic show from 1991, The Gravest Challenge, Hulk Hogan versus The Undertaker, and the Tombstone pile driver that destroyed the man's life.
Yeah.
Okay. C1, C2, C3, C1 to 50.
All the C's
destroyed.
Quite a few of the T's, I'm sure, as well.
All destroyed in Hulk Hogan from this tombstone pile driver that is heavily discussed and in this podcast. Of course, we also talk about Neil. When you're a young lad in Northern Ireland, where were you when for the first time you witnessed Macho Man Randy Savage get bitten on television by this cobra?
That I was sitting in my living room. Now, it may have been a week or two after its first broadcast because we were in syndication or whatever, but it was shown on a Sunday morning. And I was sitting watching it, distraught by these events.
Between
and I remember Survivor Series 91 quite well. I actually went to a live house show in Belfast in 1991 to see some of the roster. Randy wasn't there. Hogan wasn't there. There was quite a few people who were not there. But that was my first live WWE year, 1991.
Between this and like Optimus Prime's death in the Transformers movie. Like Rwanda where really has been the place where we talk about the traumas of Gen Xers in their childhood. So listen to that right now in the Post Wrestling Cafe. And in addition to a very busy weekend we've got with Collision Course, John Pollock has a final TNA Final Resolution review that'll be coming out on Saturday as well. And also our friends at Up Next will be reviewing NXT, along with Jack and Eric reviewing UFC this weekend. By the way, I mentioned Collision Course. We're actually going to make that a free show, just given how much other content we've got on the site. So if you want to check that out for free, you can go to postwrestlingcafe.com. And if you enjoy it, maybe sign up for the rest. That'll be me and Kate tomorrow at some point. Let's head over to tonight's edition of SmackDown, Neil. We are coming to you from Austin, Texas, at the Moody Center, ATX. According to WrestleTix, about 7,856 tickets distributed. This is down from their stop here in January of this year with 9,953 tickets out. So we start things off, and it's Drew McIntyre showing up in the backstage area. Nick Aldis and his security tell him, "What are you doing here, Drew? You're suspended. You can't be here." Even though he's been here pretty much every week, but he's not technically inside the arena, so therefore he's still abiding by the suspension. We'll still put him on TV, though, of course. You know, he's not suspended from that. Drew says he made a deal with Paul Heyman that if they win at War Games and Braun gets the title match, then Drew's suspension will be lifted. Aldis, of course, says, "He never told me. That's not how this works. Get back in your car and leave." So Drew reluctantly gets back into his car and leaves, but not before Cody Rhodes is able to sneak in through the passenger side to attack him, pulling his hair, ramming his head into the steering wheel. I thought Cody was vicious here, Neil. Like this was like some sort of road rage video that you would see on like Facebook.
Yeah, something. And he kept up that energy when he got to the ring, Cody, in fiery form here. Yeah. But we also learned that security doesn't start at the arena until you're basically inside the parking lot, because Drew in this enormous sort of pickup vehicle is able to freely drive in, and only then, you know, is he stopped by the goons and Nick with the "What part of suspended don't you understand?"
Yeah, you figure like they would have like security at the door, maybe like at the gate.
There's no gates you know, going up and down. No.
He's got his ways, of course. So Cody Rhodes is really, really angry. Really, really angry. He comes up to the arena full of fire. He's pissed about Drew attacking him in his family's tour bus. He demands that Aldis lift Drew's suspension. He says Drew may not have beaten him, but he might have been the one person to break him. And he calls him WWE's resident cockroach, and he wants to stomp him out. So very a good emotional promo from Cody here. And as a way to end Drew's suspension, were you satisfied with this method?
Pretty much, yeah. And I thought that Cody did a very good job of being the fiery, furious babyface who is basically begging the GM, "Bring him back just so I can put an end to this." And I think that's a wrestling trope, but it's done very well here by Cody, who's excellent at this kind of thing.
I agree with you. I think Cody does a great job of like being pissed off and showing a level of fire that doesn't necessarily make him uncool or maybe like hateable. And instead, you just kind of want to cheer for him. You want to cheer for him as the type of guy who you want to see kick the ass of the person who wronged him. So I thought he did a great job. DIY are in the back. By the way, where do you see that match taking place, Cody and Drew?
I was thinking Saturday night's main event, and
but that one's all NXT and WWE.
Oh, of course, that's we get to that later on in the show.
Yeah, in fact, Cody has his opponent.
He does indeed. So, and it's not advertised for next week's SmackDown. So, obviously, it's slightly further away.
Could they do Raw on Netflix, even though this is SmackDown? How could we break those lines, you know?
Well, we've got Rhea coming next week to SmackDown. Raw exclusive talent Rhea Ripley is coming to SmackDown next week, so...
Yeah. I would, at this point, either predict the Raw on Netflix, or maybe, like, they want to do a big edition of SmackDown for that particular week, too, just to maybe, I don't know, make USA happy. Maybe that's it. Let's go to the back here. DIY, they're still holding onto Axiom's mask. Ciampa says he really wants his U.S. title shot, and he's about to go and take it before Carmelo Hayes walks past him and says he's got next. And after looking at all of their shirts, Hayes calls Ciampa a jackass.
Yeah, they're trying so hard to get this jackass thing over. Three T-shirts, get a face to call him it every week. Mm-hmm. And I think last week we may have got the mildest ever kind of jackass chant during one of the commercial breaks, so it didn't even get make TV, but or maybe in the week before last, of course, because it was taped edition last week. But it doesn't seem to be working. Maybe next week when he finally takes to the ring, we'll get a
reaction. What sort of insult or name do you think they should be calling Ciampa instead? Could you offer another one maybe in 2025?
Soy boy or something like that.
Don't call me Kate soy Wilson, boy.
Well, Kate Wilson's gone missing, so you know, we've got to get the
don't call the me soy boy. Don't call my husband's best friend a soy boy. I like that way more.
I think that would be up Triple H's street.
Yeah. You know,
as an insult.
I love it. Very good choice. Well, these two, I don't think anybody calls these two soy boys. We got Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley in the back, all right? Or this is a pre-shot promo. They're talking to Aleister Black. Priest says, you brought in your family, so now I brought in mine. Rhea says that they've been through hell, and if he's going back, then I'm going to be by his side. So next week, they're challenging Black and Zelina Vega to an intergender tag team match, and we will see which team of New York, Puerto Rican, and gothy tattooed white person shall emerge victorious next week.
Yeah, this video promo opened with me rolling my eyes. Oh God, they're still carrying on with the Priest and Black thing. But by the end of this, I was like, okay, well, at least we're not just getting a retread of that match again, you know. So I am wondering how Monday Night Raw, you know, talent Rhea is going to make it to SmackDown, but we'll see.
I probably in a limousine and like red carpet that they pretty much give the entire roster. It's totally fine. Priest certainly needs this, you know, like this feud with Black isn't really all that compelling. Black is sort of half out of it already and trying to work something with Cody. But injecting Rhea Ripley into this, I mean, automatically makes this so much more interesting. So if I'm Damian Priest, I'm probably begging Rhea to stay and begging for her to leave Io Sky. Maybe that's the love triangle that we're going to get. Priest, Rhea, and Io.
I think I heard John mention the other day that Priest was relegated to main event duty quite recently. So yeah, this is anything at the moment is an upgrade. And, you know, everybody loves Rhea, so I think this is good.
Sounds like a fun sitcom. Everybody loves Rhea. We got our next U.S. Open challenge. It is, of course, Ilya Dragunov taking on the aforementioned Carmelo Hayes. So Hayes falls to the floor after a Dragunov dropkick, and he starts holding his knee. We go through commercial with Dragunov in control. The Constantine special misses. Melo instead comes back with the Tilt-A-Whirl facebuster for a two count. The crowd at this point is cheering loudly for Melo here as the underdog. The first 48 is stopped with the powerbomb from Dragunov, followed by the H-bomb that's blocked by an upkick for a two count. Melo then delivers an apron DDT. He goes up top for nothing but net, but Tommaso Ciampa comes out from the crowd and attacks Melo behind the ref's back, leading to Torpedo Moscow and the H-bomb for the victory. Upon walking back up to the ramp, Dragunov sees the replay and gets even more pissed at Tommaso Ciampa. I thought this was a good, hard-hitting, you know, match, as we kind of come to expect from these open challenges with Dragunov. And it was a good match. I wouldn't necessarily say standout among the crop, but what did you think, Neil?
I thought it had the potential to be a really, really good match. And it was hitting a really good gear when we got the interference spot, which I just hated because I really enjoy these two together. They did mention their 2023 feud in NXT. And so I was happy when this match was booked for the show and I thought it would be a good one. It was, and the crowd, I think very notably getting behind Melo, they were chanting Melo's name. they hated the finish. I did too, but I guess it just gets us to next week and this match between Ciampa and Dragunov.
They haven't done these sort of interference finishes, to my recollection, that often in these US Open challenges. And so, like, it is the one portion of the show that maybe is the closest sort of, like, pure sporting type of, like, wrestling that you're going to get in a WWE product. So them doing it this particular week, like, I didn't have a ton of issue with, especially if it's just meant to build towards a Ciampa match next week, which we will talk about later. The holiday season is fast approaching, but if you still have a few people left on your shopping list, don't worry. Uncommon Goods takes the hassle out of holiday gifting with thousands of unique, one-of-a-kind presents you won't find anywhere else. Many of these gifts are high-quality, handmade, or crafted by independent artists and small makers. One standout gift this season is the personalized Pet Family Blanket, an exclusive item created by artist Shelley Klein and available only at Uncommon Goods. Shelley creates custom portraits in her sweetly simple illustration style, where you can customize skin tones, hair, clothing colors, and pet details to make it truly personal. Measuring 50 by 60 inches, made from soft cotton and polyester, it's perfect for snuggling with your furry family. Plus, each purchase supports small makers and donates $1 to a nonprofit of your choice, including the International Rescue Committee and American Forest. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we have two editions of Rewind Away set for you, including a patron's pick where you have voted for us to review the Survivor Series from 1991, Hulk Hogan's Gravest Challenge. Then it's over to 2002 and a review of the very first WWE draft involving Raw and SmackDown as they kick off the brand extension. David Bixenspan is going to join me as we review Video Killed the Radio Star, a documentary on Bubba the Love Sponge, and the sex tape involving Hulk Hogan. Plus, we will have reviews of TNA Final Resolution, New Japan's World Tag League Final, Collision Course every single week, and XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com.
In the back, we meet with Charlotte and Alexa. Kathy Kelly asked them about War Games. Charlotte says she only joined with Alexa because of Alexa, I should say, and jokingly says that she would be lost without her. Alexa admits that their bond got stronger through War Games, and they both say that that was fun, but they're now refocused on regaining the tag team championships, and it starts tonight by beating Kairi in a singles match.
Yeah, terrible scripted banter as usual between these two. Like, you know, this sort of missing with the hand signals and the eye roll moments between the two of them. It's hard not to compare these two, who've been together for quite a bit at this point, with Nia and Lash, who have not. And now they haven't had that many backstage segments. There was one tonight, there was one a couple of weeks ago, and I think they're gelling together far nicely, far more nicely. And maybe it's easier when you're heels to do that, because it's trash talk rather than this kind of, you know, we're best friends, but we're not really, elbow, you know, oh, shucks.
I think they're trying too hard to be cute, you know? I have no doubt they might actually be cute off camera, but when they're trying to maybe fabricate it or fabricate some sort of, like, version of it on screen, I think it just kind of comes across horribly, because this is not the type of show that allows talents to really, like, be organic. Everything they're saying really feels like it's cut, like it's pre-written, whether by them or by somebody else. And when it's redone in this sort of setting, it feels way too forced.
Yeah, agreed. It's just too scripted. And I think it's supposed to be banter, and banter, whenever it's, you know, banter among friends, you know, saying things you don't really mean to kind of wind up one another. There's a spontaneity to that can't be scripted. And so when you try and you're not dealing with trained actors, I think it just comes off badly.
We get a video recapping the Last Time Is Now tournament, and then we meet with LA Knight in the back. Knight says that if he beats Cena tonight, he cements his legacy. Gunther, he recognizes, is a former champion, but Knight is an unstoppable force that he has never seen before. If you want to fight, you got one. Yeah. You like the cowboy hat?
I do. That's what I'm laughing at. The crowd liked it too, in fairness, you know, a nod to the Texans, and they love it.
I'm sure they have Cowboys in L.A. No?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is he even built for from L.A. or is that just his name?
I don't recall.
He's actually from Hagerstown, Maryland, which doesn't sound nearly as cool as L.A., but okay. All right.
Fair enough.
We got a little video highlighting AJ Styles' feud with John Cena, and I don't know if this was like a part of some sort of DVD or whatever release that they had on 24, the WWE Network or something, but featured interviews with like people like, you know, Kevin Owens and The Miz, and just highlighted their chemistry together. So
felt to me like a repurposing of something older, particularly with Owens commenting right there. I don't think that they clearly didn't put this together just for SmackDown.
We get Kairi Sane versus Alexa Bliss here as our next match, as sort of a prelude to a potential tag team encounter between these two. Tony Hinchcliffe is in attendance in Austin, so I guess Joe Rogan is in Austin, so he could have been on the Cena Rogan podcast and then here in quick succession, possibly. This is a first time matchup between these two. Kairi actually starts the match taunting Alexa about her height. And the announcers note that this is one of the few people on the roster that Kairi can actually do that to. Asuka interferes and allows Kairi.
Kairi's like a half inch taller, if that. I find this amusing.
Asuka interferes and allows Kairi to get the advantage through the commercial break. Kairi misses the sliding D as Alexa mounts a comeback, delivering natural selection. But she is distracted by Asuka when she goes for the Sister Abigail. And then Charlotte responds by attacking Asuka on the floor. Kairi, however, delivers the cutlass to Sane, goes for the insane elbow, but she takes really, really long, so long that it somehow allows Alexa Bliss to get into a standing position to catch Sane into the Sister Abigail DDT for the win. I'm sure it looked fine if you could actually like see it, but it felt really odd, the fact that she took so long and this person got up and she still jumped anyway.
That was my problem with this match. I mean, there was no actual botches in this match, or it didn't fall apart or anything like that. But it was a bit clunky, and that ending, and particularly the way it was shot on television, where you sometimes see this with the RKO, where they cut to the counter. And they did that for the Sister Abigail, and yeah, just the setup for this must have looked awful if you were sat in the arena.
Maybe not. Maybe she got up, like, you know, Randy Orton, I think, does that actually quite well. Like, you know, waits till the very last second, might wait until the person actually jumps before popping up for that RKO. I mean, maybe Alexa was trying for something like that, but we didn't see it on camera, so therefore we don't know. I thought the match was okay. It was not bad, but I didn't think it was anything standout at all. I think maybe if you're a fan of either of the two and you really wanted to see this pairing, maybe there was some novelty in that. But I mean, to me, the highlight was Kairi making fun of Alexa's height. I thought that was adorable.
Yeah.
After the match, we got Lash and Nia coming in to attack Bliss and Flair, laying them out. Lash and Nia then set their sights on Kairi, but Asuka comes in for the save, but Nia is too much for her, so they set up Kairi for the Annihilator, and then Asuka drags her to safety as Lash and Nia hold up the championships. So, a very straightforward post-match angle to build up to Kairi and Asuka's next challengers, possibly even setting up a three-way between the Kabuki Warriors, Lash and Nia, and Charlotte and Alexa.
Yeah, I that's where I see this going, is probably a three-way tag team contest for those belts. And like you guys were saying on Raw, like the women's tag team division all of a sudden has become the main focus of the women's division. And that's put into sharp relief later when we see what's going on with the WWE women's title. We'll get to that.
We will get to that. Cody meets with Aldis in the back, and Cody says he's calmed down now, and they go about their business, and their business seems to be heading into a room with Oba Femi and Ricky Saints. So Saints and Oba Femi, of course, are headlining Deadline tomorrow night, and they don't exactly know why they're here, but Cody reveals to them the news that whoever wins tomorrow will face Cody at Saturday night's main event on the same card, of course, as John Cena's retirement. So, to my knowledge, this marks the first time that we've seen Saints and Cody share screen time together on like proper WWE TV, not including, of course, like interviews and things like a podcast and things like that. Yeah. So it was kind of cool to see both of them hold their championships like this. So what do you think about this?
I like it. I didn't particularly love the way it was presented here because Cody's is arguably, and in fact, I would say the top title in the company. You know, I think it ranks above the World Heavyweight mm-hmm. Championship in WWE. And for these guys to have the opportunity to fight for it, should be an absolutely enormous deal.
Hold on a second. Is this a championship match or just non-title? I think it's non-title.
You think it's non-title?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's the way that Cody held it.
It's not confirmed, but yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes a difference, of course. But I took it in the moment as being for an opportunity for the title. And their reaction was just to get in each other's faces and sort of make a very angry grit their teeth thing, which I thought was, I mean, I'm not sure how you're meant to react to an opportunity like that, but you know, this should be an enormous deal if you're in NXT and you get to go into the ring, whether it's for the title or not, with the champion of the entire company.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fairly certain that this would only be like one of those sort of you know, like champion versus champion, nothing else is really at stake types of deals. But I could be wrong. I don't know if they were completely specific about that.
I imagine you're right, Wei, because I think they would have made it clear and the fact that they didn't.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about how they would book something like this. And, you know, like I think for me, I would have certainly predicted Saints to just win. But I would say, at least with this at stake, it kind of maybe opens up the possibility of Femi winning tomorrow as well. And for me, that's only because, you know, while Saints and Cody certainly have the real life friendship and history that they may be able to allude to on commentary, I think Femi and Cody just feels like a perfect David versus Goliath pairing and would be an amazing showcase for Oba Femi on such a stage. So it'll be interesting to see how they book tomorrow night's match and whenever they get, well, on Saturday night's main event, whoever wins, how they book the NXT champion versus the WWE champion. Will we get a finish? Will we get a draw? Will we get a finish but with some sort of, like, you know, interference? I wonder.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be too negative because, I mean, assuming we do get a clean finish, Cody versus either of these two in a first time match, and particularly Ricky, if we get that, is a big point of interest. You know, I'd really like to see it.
Yeah, certainly. So that is one of several announcements for Saturday night's main event that we got here. Nia and Lash, I really need a tag team name for them. All right. Might I suggest Nash? Okay. No?
Or Laya?
Laya? Okay. Yeah. All right. They need to work on that. All right. Naya and Lash are backstage with Kathy Kelly. Naya says that the Kabuki Warriors deserved it after Asuka missed it Lash in the face at War Games, which led to their loss. Lash says that was just a preview. They're going for the tag team titles, and they start name dropping at this point the other teams in the division between the Kabuki Warriors, the Judgment Day, Rio, which seems to be a name that's sticking, and she does call them Charlexa. Okay, so whether or not that's officially the name, well, it is according to Lash Legend here.
Yeah, I quite like these two together. And again, there's nothing Shakespearean about this, but I just think they gel together better than Charlexa do.
We go up next to Jade. I'm sorry, I'm just laughing about these terrible names. Jade Cargill takes on Alba Fire up next. This, I'm pretty sure, Neil, was non-title. This coming after Cargill interrupted Chelsea Green's U.S. title celebration last week. Chelsea slaps Cargill on the floor. Meanwhile, Julia and Kiana James come out. Julia attacks Chelsea for beating her for the championship and then drags her to the back. Now without Chelsea to help her, Jade delivers a spine buster to Alba Fire. Then the big boot, then Jade for the quick win. And just pretty much a squash match.
Yeah, sort of a squash match, but for me, I didn't even like the fact that Alba Fire, who is quite far down the card, let's be clear, she's a tremendous wrestler, but in the pecking order of this universe, she's not in the reckoning. And that sort of quick offense that she got in at the beginning that Jade has to sell, and the fact that she kind of loses via distraction almost into that finishing sequence as well. I just don't think there's any need for that. I think Jade should win much more convincingly.
I don't disagree. Yeah, I don't disagree there. This gave the impression that Jade required help in order to beat Alba Fire.
Yeah.
And maybe in some way they're trying to build again to Chelsea versus Jade Cargill, and therefore they needed to show that Chelsea was some sort of difference maker and some level of threat to Jade. But I think my bigger issue with all of this is the fact that, like, Jade has felt like such an afterthought since winning the championship, right? Yeah. Like, you know, granted, the past month has been really focused on War Games, and I'm not at all complaining about, like, the tag team titles finally getting some sort of, like, relevance in this company. But, the person that's had to kind of pay for that is Jade Cargill, who really has been doing nothing since winning the championship. So they put her with Chelsea Green, they put her with B-Fab, they're about to put her with Meechin. And, maybe like there's some thought to just giving her like big, impressive performances to mount some sort of Goldberg type of thing. But
yeah,
it's not been landing, I would say, that much. She hasn't really been the conversation very much over the past few weeks. And these segments have not taken much time on the show to the point where you just kind of forget that they happen. So she really kind of needs a big name soon to, you know, feud against, whether that be, I don't know if people want to see Tiffany Stratton again, but like who's left, you know, between her, Bianca, whenever that finger heals up, which we have no idea when, you know.
Yeah.
What are the options?
It's hard because, Alba Fire is practically in the sort of enhancement role here. You know, she's a stooge for someone else who is in a comedy role, and it feels like they've gone so all in on the tag team feud that whoever's left in the women's division, particularly on SmackDown, is of a level that really Jade shouldn't be hanging with Jade Cargill. And we see that in a couple of segments time as well with B-Fab and Meechin, who seem to be sort of next in her path. And again, they're just not up to that level. So I think that's part of the problem too, is that the people that they're pairing her with, she should be squashing, yes, but she should be squashing people who are, you can believe, would put up a decent fight.
Mm.
And I don't think she's getting that opposition.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
We go to the back with Fraxium, and they're speaking to Nick Aldis. Fraxium are complaining about DIY, and they want a match with them. Ilya Dragunov comes in complaining about Tommaso Ciampa dishonoring the U.S. title open challenge as well. So Dragunov finally demands a match with Tommaso Ciampa for the U.S. championship and is granted it, and then tells Fraxium that they can have whatever is left of him. So at this point, Tama Tonga walks in and Dragunov stares him down along with the MFTs. So we've got Dragunov versus Ciampa next week with Tama Tonga still on deck at some point.
Yeah. The long-awaited Tama Tonga Dragunov match, it's coming. Notice tonight the MFTs are in a sort of almost rock style, all of them, black t-shirts and heavy gold chains. No war paint tonight.
They needed jeans and a fanny pack, really, to complete the look. If all of them showed up as just like the Rock from the 90s, that would be my favorite faction. So we got the MFTs coming out, all black, no face paint tonight. Solo says that they promised they would take out Sami Zayn, and they did. Now they can move forward to the Wyatt Six, who he says has something that they all want. He gets a lot of what chance here, by the way. And I think credit to Solo for just like soldiering through. He says that ends when Solo, the what chance end when Solo starts pointing to the sky and he says the words, everything that was his, that's now yours, will become mine. Suddenly these what chance, they turn into, I would say, genuine heat for this reference to Bray Wyatt. Solo continues. He says, I am going to take everything away from you, everything you love, your memories, and I'm going to show everyone that you don't deserve the name Wyatt. All I have to do is believe. And of course, at this point, the lights go out, the Wyatts appear. Howdy and Solo are alone in the ring, and everybody starts brawling. This leaves Tala Tonga and Eric Rowan staring at each other in the ring. The Rowan and the Wyatts, sends Tala Tonga out to the floor, and the Wyatts are left standing tall tonight. What did you think about this promo from Solo Sikoa first?
I was kind of annoyed with the crowd because they weren't to know this, but the promo was going somewhere pretty effective. And as soon as he pointed up and sort of alluded to Bray Wyatt, they did react finally. I hate the what chance anyway. And there's maybe something to be said that Solo could have gotten to this point slightly faster than, you know, all of that sort of talking about Sami Zayn to begin with. And then this is my ring, my show, my family tree. You've been watching me. I've been watching you. There's maybe the preamble was a bit too long, and that lends itself to the crowd, you know, wanting to do this. But by the time they got there, I thought it was very good, very effective.
I'm not so sure the what chants are avoidable, like for any sort of like, you know, sustained talking segment featuring somebody who maybe just, I guess, isn't like, you know, the level of star or attraction that maybe is perceived by this crowd. I think so much of the audience is annoyed by them, yet like when you're in the arena, maybe there's just something that comes over the people that just they want to use this up. So I thought like for me the value of seeing it is to see how a talent will respond to it, and I thought Solo certainly kept his composure and proceeded with what I would suggest is one of the stronger promos of his entire career here. You know, he usually comes across like he's doing like a slightly comedic Joe Pesci type of impression, but here I think he actually felt very threatening. You know, by alluding to Bray, I think because it's so rarely done, it still carries a lot of weight. And I think, you know, certainly was enough to shut down those what chants here, which I kind of feel is unlike Mark Briscoe, whose opponents kind of bring up Jay Briscoe almost every single time. Yeah. But I thought this was very good, added some weight to the start of the feud. And I'm actually interested to see what the Wyatts have to say in return.
Yeah. My only issue really is like, it's hard to blame the crowd. They pay their money. They can do what they like, but it would have been more effective as a build to that final couple of lines, which were like, ooh, you know, you're going there.
You mean without the what chance?
Without the what chance, yes. Yes, not certainly. Sort of stepping on it.
Yeah. When are we going to get AI to come up with like a automatic, like what, you know, reducer?
Like, I'm sure
like we just put a filter on to recognize the word what so that I could replace it with like, I don't know, like a chime sound or something. No.
I think the technology is with us if you wanted to do that way.
Somebody will wait a week. It'll be created. So we go back to the back where The Miz is complaining to Nick Aldis about not being booked on Cena's last show. Aldis, you know, basically says you're a con artist for changing the balls in the tumbler last week, but doesn't really reprimand him or anything. He's like, you know, you did it. I know about it. Meanwhile, Bayley comes in. She's booked for Saturday night's main event, and Aldis introduces her to her opponent from NXT. It is Sol Ruka. Sol says that she's ready for the challenge. Bayley says, well, she'll see about that when she watches her on Deadline tomorrow. So on Saturday night's main event, we've got, of course, John Cena versus the winner of Gunther versus LA Knight. And we've got Cody versus the winner of Obafemi and Ricky Starks. And we got Bayley versus Sol Ruka. What do you think about the addition of Sol Ruka to the show?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, an interesting pairing. The other thing I noticed about this is that the first Saturday night's main event that went to Peacock, the last one, mm-hmm. was a lot better because of the fewer commercial interruptions. But in the build-up to it, it felt like they were able to talk about Saturday night's main event is coming, but they weren't able to say Peacock at any point. Hmm. That felt a bit weird, and that was not the case tonight. They were quite able to heavily sort of promote it with graphics.
Well, I don't know why they wouldn't. It's a Comcast property, just as USA is. Maybe
flubbing Raw? Like mad tonight because you're absolutely right. They both come under the Comcast banner. I'm thinking of Raw,
right?
Where on Netflix, it felt like they weren't able to allude to the NBC property at all. That's right. Hmm. But yeah, I forget because for me, everything's on Netflix as it regards WWE.
I think we'll see on Monday, certainly, how hard they drive home the fact that you can watch Cena's last match on Peacock, you know?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, they obviously will have to hit that, but whether they'll be able to tell you where you can watch it, that will be interesting.
By this point, did they get the message out there enough? I mean, they do have a lot of spots where you have to, you know, sign up to watch their things. Like some people, I don't doubt, might be confused, like turning on ESPN, hoping to see Cena's last match and then not getting it. So we'll see what the message is on Monday. Let's go to Gunther, who's with Kathy Kelly in the back. Gunther is aware that the whole locker room wants this match with John Cena, but this tournament was a foregone conclusion. He tells Cena, "I know we can't see you, but I'm certain you can see me." And he tells Cena to pay specific attention tonight to not if, but how he beats LA Knight tonight. Then we go to the back, or I should say a very, very dark room with Aleister Black, who is here and he's with his wife and he's sitting in a chair and he starts talking to the camera. He says, "Too long have you called people your friend that were not your friend? I might be everyone's enemy, but I give it to you straight. We left you a perfect monster, and here comes Rhea Ripley." Zelina then says, "Rhea is the succubus that tempts you with the family you had in your past. She wants to keep you into her cage of control. The Judgment Day is over. The Terror Twins is just a ploy to leave you in a lonely and sad state we found you in." And Black says, "If it's Inferno you want, then like Virgil to Dante, I shall guide you through it."
Wonderful transcribing way, because I did the same thing. This was my segment of the night.
Oh, we could have done it back and forth. I'm so sorry.
We could have done play acting here.
I would have gladly played Zelina to just
as hear soon
you.
As I saw Zelina with the snake around her neck, I just burst out laughing. I mean, I know that this is supposed to be serious and spooky, but I find it.
What? Hold on a second, John. Sorry, I'm gonna. I'm very used to that. Sorry, Neil.
It's a compliment, John called me away once, which was also a compliment. So,
did you not just talk about this horrifying moment from 1991 involving a snake? Well, why would you laugh at seeing Zelina Vega with a snake?
Well, I was a lot younger. It's a cobra, which is terrifying, and it drew blood.
We haven't seen this match yet. Maybe she'll set the, you know, what kind of snake this is on Rhea Ripley.
Could be, yeah. It's an albino snake of some sort because it's got no color. But the verbiage here, the usual kind of ChatGPT, please spit out some spooky nonsense. Like from Virgil to Dante, I'll guide you through the Inferno and all this.
I wonder how many wrestling fans know that, or they're strictly thinking of Virgil, the wrestler.
Yeah. At his little table.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, I still get a real kick out of these two. If these two did not talk like this, then I think there would be something wrong, something greatly missing from the show.
I want them making breakfast. I want some sort of vignettes of them, you know, just going about doing housework, talking like this.
Yes, yes.
And the snake is shat on the floor or something and they have to...
Oh, no. If it's Inferno you want, then like Virgil to Dante, I shall clean up this snake poop. Very good. Very good. Next week, the day before Saturday night's main event, we've got the Terror Twins versus Black and Zelina, Ciampa versus Dragunov for the U.S. Championship, and then we've got Alexa Bliss versus Lash Legend in Legend's first singles match, at least as part of this particular proper call-up.
Yeah.
We get one more clip from Tom Rinaldi's Cena interview, which airs this Monday after Raw on YouTube. So finally, you're getting that.
December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we have two editions of Rewind Away set for you, including a patron's pick where you have voted for us to review the Survivor Series from 1991, Hulk Hogan's Gravest Challenge. Then it's over to 2002 and a review of the very first WWE draft involving Raw and SmackDown as they kick off the brand extension. David Bixenspan is going to join me as we review Video Killed the Radio Star, a documentary on Bubba the Love Sponge, and the sex tape involving Hulk Hogan. Plus, we will have reviews of TNA Final Resolution, New Japan's World Tag League Final, Collision Course every single week, and XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com.
And then we got our main event here. The last time is now final. It is it between Gunther and LA Knight for a spot to become John Cena's final opponent. These two previously had a match back in NXT, but things are way very, very different now, of course. Knight starts brawling on the floor with Gunther early on. Gunther regains control with a big clothesline. He slows things down during the commercial break. Gunther starts grabbing wrist control, and he starts chopping Knight. The BFT is avoided by Gunther as Knight escapes the sleeper as well. He goes for a near fall and gets a two count. Knight delivers the AA. Then that's followed by the Burning Hammer, both resulting in a kickout at two. We get another commercial with a lot of yay boo from these two. Knight then escapes a Gunther powerbomb and delivers a DDT. He then hits his double jump elbow for another two count. Gunther counters the BFT with the German suplex and starts targeting Knight's neck. Gunther then delivers a big splash from the top. He goes to the other side and delivers another to the back of Knight's neck for a two count. Then a powerbomb for another two. As Gunther goes for the sleeper, Knight counters with the BFT, but Gunther gets his foot on the bottom rope. Cole calls it blunt force drama. he clearly like said it by accident at first, but then he comes back to tell us that he meant to say it. He really specified that he meant to say blunt force drama because this is high drama. Cole... sure.
Hats off, yeah.
Gunther then starts delivering hammer and anvil elbows before locking in the sleeper hold. Knight is almost able to escape by lifting Gunther into a fireman's carry, but Gunther just continues swarming him with these hammer and anvil elbows before locking in a cravat from the back that's grounded. Visually, this looks a lot like an STF, but without the toe hold. It's a nasty-looking submission, again targeting Knight's neck. The crowd is really, really hot for Knight's struggle here, but Knight holds on as long as he can before he finally taps out as Gunther looks to the camera, sending a message to John Cena saying he beat LA Knight with a variation of the STF. And then he speaks to the camera saying, "You will definitely give up. You will tap out." So Gunther confirmed as the opponent. What did you think about the match and the message at the end?
I thought the match was really good. It was easily the best thing on the show for me. I'm not a giant fan of LA Knight. I think he's a wonderful promo. He's got great charisma on camera and all of that. But I think this was one of his better outings, full stop, in the ring. Now, that is in some part down to Gunther, who is phenomenal. He's just a tremendous wrestler. But I also just think that LA Knight has to do his part, and really did. He stepped up big time in this match. The story of the neck was told really, really well. It was one of the few times where I was genuinely glad that I got the in-commercial action on Netflix. It often doesn't really matter, but to see the whole match virtually without interruption, I thought this was, we talked earlier about Survivor Series and some of the matches on there, the singles matches, were not particularly good. This was a pay-per-view level match for me. And right from the announcing, by Mark Nash at the beginning, it was sort of put on that level as, it was announced as though it was a title match, as a tournament final, I suppose, should be. But yeah, I just thought this was really good.
Yeah, totally agreed. I mean, I'm not the best with, like, you know, like my memory when it comes to LA Knight matches historically, but I certainly feel like this is up there, if not like maybe my favorite LA Knight match that I've seen on the main roster. I think Gunther is amazing, you know, like, yeah. And in this situation, I thought they did a great job of building sympathy for Knight, giving him great comebacks. And that AA and the burning hammer for the two count was great. The BFT counter into the sleeper, counter to the sleeper was really well done. And I thought, like, in service of building to Gunther as a, you know, person to beat Cena and possibly coming out of it getting this new finisher, I thought was a wonderful way of using this particular match. I mean, you know, if he makes Cena tap or give up, as he says, you know, using this move, it'll now possibly create this a submission that will always be remembered as the one that ended Cena's career, if he's actually able to make him submit with it. So to have Gunther, like, give us this sort of, like, physical representation of Cena's retirement in the form of this move, I think is sort of wonderful storytelling, and one that will kind of, like, leave us with a bit of a legacy. Now, I do feel like I still think it's likely that Cena will win, but the type of storytelling that they're trying to engage here with, like, Gunther essentially promising to make Cena tap, definitely maybe makes me question whether or not Cena will actually win, or if in the sort of, like, aim of pushing Gunther to a higher level, they'll give Gunther the win. What do you think?
I genuinely think it's an open question. I mean, it would feel fairly momentous, I think, for Cena's last match for him to give up, given this catchphrase, all of the branding, you know, of John Cena being never give up. It's hard to see, you know, but I still think it's an open question, because they're fully behind Gunther and as sort of the next sort of superstar in the company for years to come. And I think they might pull that trigger. I don't know.
Could they sell that shirt? I gave up.
They could sell any shirt that's to do with Cena, you know. Just to revisit Gunther, he just has this gift of making you, even hardened viewers like me, be able to just suspend. He makes it all look so real that I think it's a gift. I really do. I know it's professional wrestling. I'm not that dumb, you know, that I'm forgetting what I'm watching. But I just think he's got a real gift of making everything look absolutely real. And maybe some of it is just because he's a very snug worker, but some of it is also just the intensity that he puts into it. He's something else.
The style, you could certainly say, is snug, but, like, I don't think it's, like, so off from maybe the standard that we're currently seeing. I'd say, like, Dragunov is maybe looks to be a harder hitter at points than even a Gunther. Like, I think for me, so much of Gunther's matches just comes down to maybe the like, his knowing when, like, his crafting of the match, knowing when to speed up, knowing when to slow down, and just, I would say, overall storytelling. And you could say intensity. It's all of these things that are sort of like these, you know, intangibles about a pro wrestler that make him so special, and he has it all. Like, at this point, you just kind of reflect on how this guy managed to get here. Like, I mean, you know, a lot of us knew him from just, you know, being maybe a king of the indies internationally. Yeah. And somehow that guy is now the darling of Paul Levesque's WWE, to the point where, like, you're getting veterans like, you know, The Undertaker and just, I mean, everybody really kind of singing this guy's praises. They trust him enough to not just give him Bill Goldberg's final match, but now John Cena's final match. Really is incredible how great he's done, and the fact that he's been given the chance to showcase that on such a grand stage.
It's amazing. And I think we've seen sort of a couple of evolutions of him since he came into the company, you know, but he, you know, when he was in NXT and into the main roster, he seemed to cut a lot of weight from his Walter days and became very kind of shredded. You know, he got really muscular, but I thought looked a bit less intimidating for that, because he looked very lean. You know, he's kind of rangy. He's very tall. And I think now they've hit, a kind of a sweet spot physically, where he looks somewhere in between, if you like. You know, he's not the big Walter of the past, but he's not that kind of very straight from the gym abs guy either, which I just didn't think looked wonderful on him. So I think everything's just working in his favor at the minute.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got Raw, we've got SmackDown, with which they essentially have to, you know, really put a little bit more heat towards this match. And we don't have Cena on either of those shows. I'm hoping we get some more, you know, promo time from Gunther on Monday, more so than Friday, because Friday you only really get one day to really digest it. But like, I'm hoping we get to hear from him on Monday, and I hope to hear more about, well, how he's going to make Cena give up. Because I think, you know, this tournament, I think has been a great way to push Gunther into this position. But I think they also need to now really spend the time, now that we know what the match is going to be, to make it a little bit more personal. And I'm curious to hear if, like, Cena is able to respond in some way. Maybe
I was going to say, it's a shame, really, that we don't get a face-to-face with these two before next Saturday. Even if we got a video message or something from Cena on Raw, I think that would help a bit. At the fact that Gunther is going to have to go out on Monday and kind of sell this match on his own, he will do a good job, because he's a good promo and he's very menacing. But I think it's a shame that we don't have a prelude with Cena.
See, I wonder if, like, Cena has many more media obligations over the next week. And, you know, he's been asked on some of these interviews about who your opponent is, and Cena says he doesn't know. Well, now he knows. So will it offer him an opportunity to talk a little bit about Gunther? Can we get Gunther on, I don't know, like Jimmy Kimmel or... I don't know, Bill Simmons or Joe Rogan. Can you imagine this guy on the Joe Rogan Experience?
Yeah, for 2 hours or more.
I might actually tune in.
I would tune in for once. All right.
So that is it. What did you think about SmackDown tonight?
I thought the main event kind of saved the show. There was also the US Open Challenge is always fun, but I didn't really like the finish to that this week. So for me, it was all about the main event, and it was a lengthy match. I mean, I think it was plus half an hour, wasn't it, or so? But a really good one. And like we said, probably LA Knight's one of, if not his best, in the company. For that, I'll give this a thumbs up for SmackDown tonight.
Yeah, to me, it doesn't receive the highest recommendations, but I thought the main event was certainly, like, well worth watching if you're a fan of Gunther. Certainly, if you're a fan of LA Knight, this might possibly be LA Knight's best WWE match. I thought Solo Sikoa had a pretty standout promo on the show. So
yeah.
if you wanted to hear a little bit of that, I mean, I don't know how interesting this MFT versus Wyatt Steel is going to be, but it certainly got started on the right foot tonight.
There's stuff that's not good. I was going to say main event scene on the women's side, but it doesn't feel even like that. The Jade verse and who she's stuck with, isn't good. I think some of the promos weren't, you know, so you take the good with the bad.
Yeah. Yeah. As always in professional wrestling. And lots of good and lots of bad will be discussed. I want to apologize for our Post Wrestling Cafe patrons, because I forgot to put the feedback thread up. I am a terrible host. So we will maybe leave that for this particular week. And instead, we actually do have a super chat here from a member of our YouTube channel who responds by saying, "Hey, Kirk freaking Angle 07, member for 32 months. He says, great work. I can't believe they went all in with Gunther. This dude ain't it. Someone had to say it. He's not over, and is it the next big thing?" I think that's a hot take.
Very Kurt, hot take. Come on. He is over. I think you can argue over whether he's the next big thing or not, but he's over.
Yeah, I don't. Sure. I don't know if this person is being sarcastic or what. Like he, like define over. I suppose. Like if you don't think Gunther is. I mean, whether or not. Okay, so. If you're John Cena, you're looking for his final opponent. I guess you have a lot of options, okay? But like, I think Gunther represents the perfect mix between somebody who, you know, is still has many years left in this company that you can really benefit from, and also somebody who will give him a great match, represents like an incredibly huge heelish obstacle for him to overcome. And again, like, you know, will continue to give you maybe some value coming off of this accolade for years to come that your other baby faces will be able to benefit from.
Yeah, because at the beginning of the year, I was thinking, right, we were all kind of like theorizing who is Cena's final opponent going to be. Mm-hmm. Will it be somebody like Punk, you know, who's kind of up there? And what's the point in that, really? I mean, it doesn't really matter, you know, in the end. So you're looking for someone who it becomes a milestone in their career. And I think here, win, lose, or draw, it's going to be a really good match because Gunther, probably in part because Gunther is involved in it. And I think even if he loses, and I kind of hope he does, because I hate to hark back to it, but I really didn't like the Lesnar thing at all. But, you know, Cena has been losing. And I enjoyed very much the Sting happy ending retirement. I think, you know, this idea that you've got to go out on your back looking at the lights and putting over the next talent is such an old school mentality. You could do that with Gunther, but he doesn't need it. As long as he gives it Cena a really, really good contest, people will still, you know, remember it as being a big part of his career, of Gunther's career.
That is next week, everybody. So, but until then, we have a very, very, very busy week here at Post Wrestling and in the world of wrestling itself. Of course, tomorrow I'll be back with Collision Course with Kate from Montreal, exclusively for members of the Post Wrestling Cat. Well, you know, never mind. That one is free, everybody. So you get a bonus edition of Collision Course with me and Kate talking about the continuation of the Continental Classic. Of course, Kate will also be talking a little bit about ROH Final Battle, which is taking place right now. TNA. Final, what do they call this? Final Resolution. I'm getting confused with the finals here. TNA Final Resolution is taking place right now, or just finished, in fact. And John Pollock will have a review of that exclusively for Post Wrestling Cafe members tomorrow. Then we've got on Sunday, UFC 323 review with Jack and Eric in the Post Wrestling Cafe. And then on our free feeds, we've got our friends at Poison Rana covering NXT Deadline. That will be out on Sunday for everybody. So until then, thank you very much, Neil, for always joining me once a month on these particular shows. Where can people hear more of you and find more?
Thanks, Way. Well, you and I and Jordan Goodman convene once a month for the wellness policy, so we'll have one of those before the month. It's going to be an incredibly busy December for everybody, everyone at Post Wrestling. And for Double Double and Espresso Tier members, I join John once a month as well, and we'll be reviewing Natty Neidhart's memoir, which is just out on Book Club before the month's out, after Christmas, I think, 30th of December or something like that, but more to follow on that.
Great work, as always, Neil, and great work to everybody at postwrestling.com, especially John Clanchester, who covered both ROH Final Battle and SmackDown simultaneously at the same time. So shout out to Clanchester over there. All right, everybody, talk to you guys tomorrow. Bye-bye.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.